Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the India Grid Trust Q1 FY23 results conference call hosted by Edelweiss Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone telephone. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Swarnim Maheshwari from Edelweiss Securities. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Kathy, and thanks for dialing in all. I welcome you all on India Grid Trust Q1 FY23 results con call. From the management today, we have with us Mr. Jyoti Kumar Agarwal, CEO and Whole Time Director, Ms. Divya Bedi Verma, CFO, Ms. Meghana Pandit, Chief Investment Officer, and Mr. Satish Talmale from the Chief Operating Officer. I would like to hand over the call to Mr. Jyoti Agarwal for his opening remarks, post which we'll be have a detailed Q&A. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Swarnim, and good afternoon to all the investors on the call. I'm sure by now you would have gone through the presentation that we have shared yesterday. I'll quickly take you through some portion of the presentation, and then the rest of the leadership team will take you through the rest of it, and then we'll throw it open for questions and answers. If you go to the slide four of the presentation, it's an overview of the overall quarter one highlights. At an organizational level, the first and foremost thing that I want to talk about is the transition in the leadership. We've seen Harsh moving on to you know, newer pastures. Given the systems and processes that have been in place, we've seen a seamless transition in both the CEO role as well as the CFO role. We've also seen one more leadership change, where Swapnil Patil, who has been the company secretary for a long period of time with us, ever since inception, due to personal reasons, you know, at his family level, he had to move on. The deputy company secretary, Urmil Shah, has been appointed by the board in his place effective August 1. We have completed 5 years, and over the 5 years, we've grown tremendously through value-accretive acquisitions, superior asset management framework, and best-in-class corporate governance practices, while ensuring continued stability and predictability in the platform. We thank all the stakeholders, including unitholders, for your trust and confidence in us. On the financial performance update, this year, the revenues and EBITDA have been more or less steady, a marginal growth of about 1% or 2%. This marginal increase was largely due to robust asset management framework, where we could get some cost synergy and additional incentive despite no major acquisitions during the period. Collections this quarter are better than the corresponding quarter last year, although still short of the pre-COVID level, but we're seeing you know, much better traction in terms of collections in the last couple of quarters. In line with our DPU guidance, the board of directors approved DPU of 3.30 rupees for Q1, and we are on track to achieve the DPU target of 13.20 rupees per unit for FY23. Our AUM was relatively unchanged at about 21,000 crores, leading to a net debt to AUM of about 58%, leaving enough headroom for growth before we hit the statutory cap of 70%. On the operational performance side, we were impacted by unprecedented rains and floods in one of the regions where we have a large asset, which is the Northeast region, which did impact availability. Nevertheless, we were still able to manage, you know, sort of a handsome average availability of 99% in quarter one. We've been able to implement DigiGrid across the entire portfolio, and Satish will talk later on during the presentation in terms of what that entails for us. If you move to the next slide, on the industry update, well, we've seen, you know, a robust coming back of power demand. We've seen a peak power demand of an all-time high of 213 GW in April. Again, for the quarter, it was very high at about 210 GW. This was largely due to the post-pandemic economic activity coming back, also helped by heatwave in Northwest India. We have crossed 400 gigawatts of installed capacity in June, and it's nice to know that we're inching towards 30% share of renewable. In terms of the regulatory developments or industry developments, we see very, very robust pronouncements in terms of the spend estimates on transmission over the next 5 years, almost as high as 1.2 trillion rupees. You know, as high as 32,000 circuit kilometers of transmission lines and nearly more than 2 lakh megavolt ampere of transformation capacity. Now, all this would mean that there would be a lot of biddings in the ISTS space, and many of those assets would come through for, you know, the market of corporate control in the secondary market, and we would be very actively looking at it. Apart from this, I think the NMP, the National Monetization Pipeline, is also catching traction, and we do expect some of the assets in the transmission space to be coming in the market over the course of this financial year. We'll be actively looking at this space for opportunities. We're seeing investments in interregional transmission capacity, largely for the evacuation of the new generation centers to the grid. Mostly it's renewable, and we've seen one of our assets that we have bid out and won, Kalam, also being a part of that. And we're seeing a lot of traction, regulatory and otherwise, on the battery energy storage space, which we are also proactively watching to see how do we leverage on this as an adjacent play to our current portfolio. I'll now hand it over to Satish to take it over the next slide, please.
Thank you, Jyoti. So I will update on the quarter one operational performance. From EHS perspective, we had a zero event quarter, no injuries, no incident. The proactive reporting culture and a lot of measures around developing EHS culture has helped to maintain consistently zero harm status. On availability, quarter one average availability was at 99%. And if you look at the bar chart, I think you'll find two assets which are lower than our target availability. One is RTC. So there is no practically impact on IntiGrid because this was indemnified event. It was a road highway diversion project which got recovered from NHAI, both from revenue loss perspective as well as from cost perspective. On NER, as Jyoti mentioned, we had an unprecedented situation in Assam, and due to flash floods, one of the towers got collapsed. Happy to share that we could able to restore that tower, and lines are already charged. And we are highly confident that we'll lose measure claim pass through. On reliability, I think happy to share that in quarter one, we have achieved lower trips per line compared to last year. Typically, quarter one has increased trips per line because of changing weather conditions, but the performance was better than previous year quarter. Digital asset management, glad to share that all our assets are on digital platform. That means that every field activity which is performed are getting monitored, differentially captured on the digital platform. This will definitely help IntiGrid to create a platform which will be highly sustainable to enhance our life cycle risk and improve our cost efficiency as well. At the same time, we have integrated digital platform with the SAP ERP system, so that activity is also completed. Emergency preparedness, we do have emergency restoration system which has really helped us during this unfortunate incident in Northeast. We could able to restore it, and of course the investment in climate forecasting technology has helped us managing our outages and mitigating any proactive risk which gets encountered due to high wind conditions. Glad to share that we are now certified with ISO 27001, which is a cybersecurity certification, and all our risk mitigation measures are largely completed on cybersecurity front. On the right hand side, there are few indicators. We spoke about trips per line. The focus on EHS trainings continued. lost time incidents are zero. There is a good track record of reporting culture, which is reflecting in the number from compared to last year. You can see that. On utility solar, we generated total 57.52 million units with CUF of 19.08%, with the plant availability exceeding our targets. It is slightly lower than compared to last year because of the cyclone which happened in the month of May, which impacted a bit of solar radiation. That's why it's slightly lower. Otherwise, availability point of view, reliability point of view, performance is meeting expectations. Thank you. And we'll hand over to Divya.
Yeah. Hi. Thank you, Satish. I'm on slide number 7, on quarter one financial performance. For this quarter, we have clocked in a revenue of around 561 crores and an EBITDA of 512 crores. As against the previous year quarter, there's a growth of marginal growth of 1 and 2% respectively in revenue and EBITDA. NDCF generated for the quarter stands at 115 crore. As compared to the previous year quarter, we see a downfall. But for comparison purpose, I will exclude one of items. Like last year quarter, we have done factoring of around 50 crores. So like-to-like basis, we are almost there on the same numbers as a stable revenue EBITDA and a stable NDCF. The DPU for the quarter as approved by the board and as per our guidance is 3 rupees 30 paisa. As compared to the previous year quarter was 3 rupees 19 paisa. We see a growth of 4%. So the platform is showcasing stable sustainable growth and value accretion coming on DPU. Coming on the collections for the quarter stood at 77%. As compared to the previous year quarter, collection were at 70%. We have seen during last 2 years in COVID, the collection in quarter one have been largely impacted because of COVID. In financial year 21, we've seen a quarter one collection stood at 56%, last year at 70%, and this quarter at 77%. We are catching up with the collection. We see the trend of catching up with the collection. And just to update, on 1st of July, we clocked in another additional 4%, else the collection percentage for the quarter one would have been around 80%+. The DSO days stood at 65 days for this quarter end. Coming on slide number 8, as approved by the board, the distribution of 3 rupees 30 paisa would be in form of interest 3 rupees 6 paisa and a capital repayment of 24 paisa. For a unit base of around 70 crores, this quarter we will be distributing 201 crores. With this distribution of 231 crores, total distribution since inception of IPO is around 3,200 crores across 12 units, with an average of 61 rupees 82 paisa, which have been distributed at till date. The record date of this distribution will be 1st August of 2022, and the tentative distribution will be happening by 10th of August. And the graph on the right-hand side, which showcases 3 to 4% year-on-year growth on our quarterly distribution trend. Coming on the next slide, number 9, which is the showcase of our EBITDA to NDCF waterfall. So, Consulta is 510 crores at SPV level with adjustment of various finance costs, working capital movement, tax and capex. We have generated NDCF of 115 crores in this quarter. As we started with a healthy reserve of 221 crores, so this quarter of doing any factoring or any other measure, we have dipped into a reserve of 116 crores and our closing reserve stands at 105 crores. With this, we will be achieving our distribution of 231 crores as per our guidance. Now I'll hand over to Meghna to take up the next slide.
Thanks, Divya. Coming on slide number 10, this sheet continues to remain robust with AAA rating by all the three rating agencies. In Q1 FY23, out of the overall refinancing of FY23 of about 2,400 crores, happy to share that we have refinanced almost 88% of that. So other than 300 odd crores, we have refinanced the entire requirement of refinancing for this fiscal. And that has happened at an average borrowing of about 6.94 for this quarter, which is substantially lesser than the overall average cost of debt, which stands at around 7.51. This is again lower. If you look at Q4 of FY22, this stood at about 7.76. With this refinancing getting done, the average cost of debt today stands at 7.51. So we are 76% of our borrowings being fixed rate. We are geared up to face the headwinds of the interest rate environment that we are seeing. We have a very healthy net debt to AUM of about 58%, leaving significant headroom for future acquisitions. Our cash balance again stood at a healthy level of 880 crores, which includes about 230 crores for distribution, almost about 350 crores of DESRA, and rest as free cash. If you look at the right-hand side pie, shows the diversified book of the total gross borrowing of 12,700 odd crores, which is between NCDs of 40% and bank loans of 60%. Even within the NCDs and bank loans, we can see a very diversified mix of investors across mutual funds, corporates, retail, public NCD holders, private as well as public sector banks put together. Coming to the refinancing schedule on the slide, we can see that it is very well spread overall, ranging between about 10 to 12% of the gross borrowing. So there isn't any particular year in which there has been a bunching up of maturity, which we had seen for FY23, which in any case now largely stands refinanced. Moving on to the next slide, which talks of about our return, we continue to perform on a total return basis, total return being depicted by the distribution and price change. On our distribution part, we have delivered about 59% and price change of about 42%, aggregating that to the total return of 101%, annualized return being 15%. Compare that to play debt product of 10-year, 30-year GSEC. We have outperformed that on the right-hand side, as you can see, with pure play equity indices as well as other indices. We have outperformed those. More importantly, on a risk-adjusted basis, which is depicted by the beta, stood at the lowest levels of 0.08%. So we have been consistently outperforming the comparables for this quarter as well. I will hand it over to Jyoti to cover a bit about the business outlook for this year. Jyoti?
Thanks, Meghna. So going forward, we will continue to focus on maintaining stable operations for predictable and sustainable distributions while looking for value-accretive acquisitions. I think on the portfolio side, with the implementation of DigiGrid across the entire portfolio, we are very confident that it will enable us to strengthen our operational capabilities through predictive, preventive, and risk-based maintenance practices, which is very important given the diversity of the portfolio and the terrain where it operates. We will continue to play a stewardship role in advocating policy initiatives for InvITs, including index inclusion and tax reforms, and remain very optimistic about the growth potential of the power sector on the back of supportive regulatory policies and growing investments. We believe we are well positioned with our, you know, steady cash flows and low cost of debt to tap into the opportunities in transmission, solar, and other related adjacencies in the country. So that brings us to the end of our quarterly update. I'll request the moderator to open it up for Q&A, please.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Thank you. The first question is from the line of Mohit Kumar from DAM Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good evening, sir. And congratulations on another steady quarter. My first question is on the, of course, we have gone through the entire regulation, you know, in the last few years. How do you see the pipeline, or at least the third-party assets pipeline, especially for transmission? looking at this point of time, do you think there are sizable opportunities available, or it's too low and we need to look for the different kind of assets to grow our business? And are we looking to acquire something in this fiscal year?
Yeah, Mohit, a good question. I'll let Meghna address it in detail, but I'll share my perspective. I think if you look at our business, the core is transmission, and we have a reasonable outlook in terms of pipeline in this space. Now, obviously, M&A, you know, happens in spurts, and there's also some bunching up of bidding that has happened over the last, you know, few years, where some of the assets will, in our opinion, come through in the market for corporate control over the next 12 to 18 months. And we are proactively scouting those opportunities as we speak, and we'll be very actively looking at those assets as and when they come into the market. I don't see there being a dearth of opportunities, but yes, we will have to be selective in terms of what opportunities one plays with, given you know, our whole value proposition of ensuring that these are value accretive to unit holders at the end of the day. There would be obviously opportunities from the NMP process, and we would like to believe for a fair price discovery, the PGCIL assets as part of NMP should be auctioned. In my opinion, if they will be auctioned, then we'll be actively looking for those opportunities as well. So there are opportunities. Of course, we cannot talk about some of the assets specifically where we are working on, and I would hesitate to give you guidance in terms of whether we'll do asset acquisitions this financial year or not. When there is the moment where, you know, there is development on the M&A front, will obviously come to the market and announce. But I can tell you that there are opportunities, and the M&A team is actively scouting for those. But maybe Meghna can provide more details, please.
Sure, yeah. Adding on to what Jyoti said, Mohit, if you look at from an acquisitions perspective, you remember that the framework assets, framework agreement that we had entered into with Sterlite, there is one asset which achieved COD in December 2021. So that is one of the assets that we are looking to acquire. And as and when you know, we complete the process, we will, of course, announce to the market. Other than that, I would say a couple others on the operational transmission side also remains you know, that we are looking at. The third bucket that I would categorize acquisition opportunities would be, you know, the solar projects that we had said we will be very selectively looking at, specifically with long-term PPAs, with SECI, NTPC, and strong counterparties such as those. I think Jyoti also mentioned that we are very closely watching and monitoring the battery energy storage services, utility scale ones, where we believe a lot of our you know, operational efficiencies will come to the play. Plus, as a transmission player, we already have these leverages which we can work towards. So this is an adjacent space that we are closely looking at, in addition to the NMP, which I think Jyoti spoke about. So these are the ones, you know, from an acquisition perspective that we are closely looking at as we speak. Yeah.
When do you expect the clarity on the power grid national monetization pipeline, the second tranche, any sense of, you know, anything you're hearing from the government on the timelines?
Yeah, so it is past due. I think there are some structural nuances which they are trying to iron out, given the intent is to try and not sell the asset while selling the rights and, you know, liabilities associated with those assets. And that's, you know, an engineering problem, which for power sector in particular, given the highly regulated space, it is taking some time to sort out. But we believe, you know, towards the second half of this financial year, some assets in the transmission space will come through, and they will be through a market determined process. Obviously, we are actively looking for those assets to come in the market, and we'll be bidding for them for sure.
After the cash flow side, I see that there's an increase in working capital in this particular quarter. Is this temporary, or you think this is going to reverse, or this is going to be permanent?
So the first quarter generally is the weakest of the quarters when it comes to collections. That has been the historical trend. And while this quarter we've had better than last corresponding quarter of the last year, but at 77%, much lower than the average for the year. So this is a usual trend. Working capital, because of collections being lower, tends to go up and then normalizes over the remaining quarters.
Understood. Thank you, sir. Best of luck. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rui Papari from Reliance Nippon Life Insurance. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible? Hello.
Yes, Rui, you are audible. Please go ahead with your question.
Yeah. Congratulations on the good set of numbers, and thank you for taking my question. So I just have one main question, and that is pertaining to the availability of the transmission lines. Like for two lines, we've seen that it has gone below the requirement as such. And the reasons are actually provided. I wanted to understand with respect to this, is there any P&L impact to this? And if yes, how much? And also, like, going forward, any corrective actions or steps which we may have taken with respect to the same? That's my first question. And second is the follow-up question on the working capital, is majorly that, this time because of the high working capital, I understand this is a quarterly, seasonally phenomena that way, that in Q1 the collections are lower and hence the working capital is kind of really high. So we've seen a little dip in the reserve. So, if you could just throw some light with respect to the building of the reserves in the going quarters, would be helpful. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Rui. I'll probably take the question on reserve, and then Satish maybe can address your questions on lower availability in those two assets that you spoke about. So if you look at our reserve build-up, generally in the first quarter of the year, there is a dip in the reserve because of lower collections, right? And of course, if you look at the last 2 years, because they were COVID impacted, the dip in the reserves was quite steep. Now, we have been doing factoring in the first quarter to meet our commitments on DPU, which sort of get normalized in the next quarter. So if you look at the quarter one of FY22, there was a factoring of 50 crores that was done. And if you adjust for that, the actual collections are comparable at about 118 odd crores, in the last year first quarter, and about 115 odd crores of NDCF in this quarter, right? So it's sort of comparable. There was a one-day anomaly where about 20 odd crores of collections were supposed to come on the 31st, or 30th of June spilled over to the 1st of July. So if you add that, then like-to-like, I think it's comparable compared to last year. We did not do factoring because one, there was a very, very healthy reserve of almost one quarter of DPU. We had a bumper collection in March quarter, and so we thought that instead of having a negative carry where your cash is earning 3.5% and you pay a much higher rate on the factoring, we decided to dip into the reserve. We don't see this to be a worrying thing. We will see a catch up of the reserves in the ensuing quarters, to levels which are more normal. So I don't think, we as management are that much worried about it. We will see a gradual sort of normalization of reserves in the coming quarters. Maybe Satish, you can address the lower availability in RTCL and NER.
Sure. Thanks, Jyoti. So on these two assets, the number one, RTCL is basically a road line diversion work where all the commercial losses are recovered. So it's basically a contractual arrangement wherein we perform our obligation to correct the line, and NHI, provides recovery for the cost as well as for revenue loss. So that's pretty simple. On NER, as it's a force majeure event, definitely it's qualified as a force majeure, and we will get the deemed availability certificate. On the corrective action, those are on two fronts. One is on temporary restoration, so the line is already charged, so which caters for immediate power requirement in that particular region. The permanent restoration will take some more time because we have to rebuild the foundation, and then monsoon is also there. So looking at that, once we complete the job, then definitely we will get dimmed availability certificate. So which will bring us back to our original availability targets. I hope that helps.
Is there any PNL impact because of NER?
Yeah, Divya, you want to take this question on PNL impact?
Divya, you want to address that?
Yes. Okay, for the current quarter, we have considered a P&L impact of negative of 12 crore, but which is temporary in nature, as we have a confirmation of force majeure and we are expected to receive this certificate by August, we will reverse. So it will get trued up in the subsequent quarter when we receive the certificate.
Understood. Very helpful. Thank you so much for answering my question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vivek Ramakrishnan from DSP Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. I'm sorry to be like a stuck record on this collections bit, but I was just trying to get the rhythm of your collections because it changes the working capital cycle. Is there any predictability to it, or do we need to see it quarter on quarter in terms of how it goes, and eventually hope that because of priority you will get your collections? And the second question related is there any errant counterparties in the overall collection pool that is causing this delay, which can easily get righted in another quarter? Those are my questions. Thank you.
Yeah, Vivek, good question. I think there are, the second question is the easiest. I mean, there are no like specific counterparty risks in the collection. That's the advantage of being a part of the ISTS CTU pool. Whatever risks are there are generic to the entire, transmission service providers and not specific to us. In terms of the pattern of collections, I think this is pretty much the normal pattern of collection that we've seen across the last 5-6 years. Just that the first quarter collections, despite being the lowest, are a little bit higher than what we've seen this quarter. Normally they are in the range of 90%, but they are the lowest for the year. So there's some bit of, post-COVID catch-up which is supposed to happen. Also, you must be mindful that there was a little bit of a front loading of collections in the March quarter. We saw a tremendous uptick in the collections in the month of March, for example. So that has also led to a little bit of lower collections in this particular quarter. So, but I don't think there is any aberration here. This will normalize over the next couple of quarters, as you will see. And given this is an ISTS CTU pool, this is sort of not specific to us. We are not getting any priority over others. It's just that this is the overall systemic collections at the CTU level and distributed proportionately to all the transmission service providers. So this is endemic to the entire transmission industry as far as ISTS is concerned. We don't get any one way or the other. We are not higher than anybody else and not lower than anybody else. Yeah?
Yes, thank you. You've got it. And wish you luck, Jyoti.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rahul Marathi from ICICI Prudential Pension Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, sir, for taking my question, and congratulations on good set of numbers. So just wanted to know on two things. On the BESS side, you said that you are looking at various opportunities. So if you could just quantify some of the upcoming opportunities or anything on that side. And secondly, on the factoring that you had mentioned, so what are the costs that are we incurring on the factoring in terms of annual percentage?
Yes, Rahul, we have not done any factoring this quarter. We had done it in the corresponding quarter of the last year, so there's no factoring costs that we have paid in this particular quarter. In terms of BES, yeah.
Yeah, for the previous, what was the rate that you paid? I wanted to understand the rate.
I think there is generally a 2-2.5% negative carry. I think, if my memory serves me right, we were at about 5.5-6% versus a cash yield of about 3-3.5, right? So there is a negative carry, which we decided, given there's such a healthy reserve, we don't want to do that in this particular quarter. Yeah?
Yeah. And on,
and on your question, yeah, on your question on DSS, I'll let Meghna address the specific details, but the way we are looking at this opportunity is that, look, this is very, very adjacent to the transmission business, given that many of our substations have a lot of extra land and you don't need that much extra land for setting up a battery energy storage station. What you need is connectivity to the grid and beyond the grid. So, and then this is also passive, no moving parts and availability-based revenue mechanism. So, so we see a lot of adjacency as far as BDS is done with our transmission footprint. But then that's where the similarities end and the differences start. Technology-wise, this is an evolving space. A lot of moving parts there, and the regulatory and the commercial construct is also evolving globally and so in India. So we are looking at it very, very closely. We see this is a very attractive space to sort of foray into in due course. But some certain things will have to fall in place, especially the regulatory and the commercial certainty for it to sort of fit very well with our overall value proposition of predictable and stable cash flows, right? But we're watching it very closely. We're into the whole bidding process, giving our suggestions to the regulators, the authorities, and keeping ourselves abreast with the developments, with the ecosystem, so that once it sort of ticks the right boxes, we can play a meaningful role here. In terms of the specific opportunity, maybe Meghna can elaborate about those.
Yeah, so Rahul, typically from a size perspective, it varies on you know, what the bid specifications are, and it can, you know, it can range from 200 megawatts to 500 to 600 megawatts. It's very bid specific per se, and we are seeing that you know, this market is evolving. So to be honest, you know, we'll not be able to mention a particular number because it's a range. I think what is important is this adjacency is something that we are closely monitoring, and as and when, you know, we participate in it, we'll be able to throw more light on from a quantum perspective what is it that we are targeting. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sarvesh Gupta from Maximal Capital. Please go ahead.
Before I ask the question, just a clarification. You mentioned the revenue loss at 20 crores for the NER, right?
12 crores.
12 crores, okay. So two questions. First of all, you know, now that we have shown a YOY growth of almost 1-2%, so it means almost 5 quarters we haven't been able to, you know, add any assets or AUM largely. And this is despite, you know, many of the sellers might be anticipating an increase in the rates. So despite that, we haven't been able to do anything on the AUM front. And also it is more surprising because you added two more dimensions to it. One was solar and second was battery that we have been talking about. So despite all of this, you know, 5 quarters gone, no asset addition, very, very surprising. So, you know, if there is any specific information that you want to share, why that hasn't been done, especially in a, you know, rising interest rate scenario, because the sellers would know that asset prices will go lower. And many people would have anticipated that. That is number one. Second is, again, you know, we have been looking at this big refinancing chart for FY23 for a very long time of 2300 odd crores. And ultimately, we did it in the June quarter of this year, where we would have got a much higher rate compared to what we would have got earlier. And I think a lot of people have been giving this feedback for a long time that if possible, we should have done refinancing earlier. Then why did we wait all the way for the rates to increase? So any covenants or specific information that you can share why it had to be done in 1Q and not earlier when so much of feedback was given around that?
So, Sarvesh, first of all, you know, you may be surprised, but frankly, we are not surprised that, you know, we've not grown the AUM because that's not really our core value proposition. it's important that we understand our core value proposition is that we grow the AUM, but we grow it in a manner which is fitting with the business model, with the strategy of the platform, that it has to be value accretive, and it has to generate NDCF, which provide predictable DPU. If you look at the market for transmission, I don't think there have been too many secondary transactions. In fact, hardly I can recognize or remember standalone transmission assets being available in the market. So be patient, and that's the right thing to do. When an opportunity comes, which fits into the model, we will bite it. We don't have to grow for the sake of growth, and definitely not at the cost of predictable distribution. So that's an important thing which I thought I'll address. In terms of, you know, the second question, maybe Meghna, you can address that.
Yeah, sure. So, Sarvesh, if you look at the cost of borrowing at which we have already refinanced it, it is, I would say, substantially lower than our average cost, which has been there. More importantly, it is in line with the low-cost interest rate environment that we were in. So we have taken advantage of, you know, the interest rates which have been there. More than the covenants, we had lined up refinancing and we had lined up line of financing for specifically this refinancing. And when the opportunity was there, we had refinanced it, to be honest. So not very sure, there was no point in refinancing it and paying any specific prepayment or breakdown costs. However, idea was to preemptively tie up in advance and accept when the opportunity got provided.
Okay, so first follow-up on the first question is, so solar was also that we added, right? So I understand transmission, very little has been done on the deal side, but what about solar, which was at a higher IRR compared to our average assets? And that's where we added because we were seeing sort of a dry run on the transmission side. So, are we not seeing any opportunities which will suit us in the solar side because that hasn't grown, that book also hasn't grown much? And secondly, on this refinancing side, so let's say, 6 months back, what was the rate at which we were raising and what is the rate at which we have refinanced this 2,000 odd crores, if you can tell me that. Thank you.
So, Sarvesh, the short answer to your first question is that yes, there are no opportunities in solar that we have been able to look which fit into the model. Otherwise, you can rest assured that, we would have announced something, right? So that's a short answer. In terms of the refinancing, it's there on the slide 10. We've refinanced this particular large chunk at sub 7%. So it sort of brought down our average borrowing cost by almost 25 basis points. And we did that preemptively ahead of the hardening of the rate. So like, I think a year back, this particular financing would have cost us upwards of 7.5. So we've been about 50 to 60 basis lower this year. And we did this proactively to the extent we could, where it made commercial sense. We preemptively borrowed at attractive rates and refinanced it. There's been a significant benefit on the refinancing because the assets of the loans which were coming off a very high watermark of 9%, and that's what led to the lowering of the average book by almost 25 basis points. Going ahead, there are a couple of refinancings which are coming up, not a large chunk now. I think over the next 1 year, there would be about 550-600 crores of refinancing. Now, these are also coming off a high watermark of almost 8.5-8.6%. We are already in discussion in terms of proactively sort of refinancing these at the right time. We do expect, despite the hardening cycle, there to be a net value accretion to the bottom line because the refinancing rate will be lower than the hurdle at which these liabilities are coming off.
Understood. Thank you and all the best for the coming quarters.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of K.U. Rashid from PNB MetLife. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. I just had a quick follow-up question on NER. So the deemed availability certificate application that you mentioned, so that is a protection for the revenue loss or capital or both? So I would assume that we'd be incurring some capital cost also for the restoration. So if you could throw some light on that.
No, good question, Kayum. Maybe I can address it, and Satish, you can chip in. So there are two impacts. You rightly captured it, Kayum. There are two impacts. One is, of course, there is an availability loss because this is a tower collapse, and that you get protection under the force majeure clause through the deemed availability. Then obviously there is a cost of restoration as well. We anticipate, and let's see what the final design and engineering solution to the permanent restoration comes in. We do anticipate anywhere between, let's say, 8-12 crores on the restoration between now and September, October. Now, this is our entire footprint is fully insured, including NER, and this we get recovered through the insurance. So that's how we get protection in terms of the capital cost of restoration, as well as the availability through the force majeure deemed availability route. Satish, you want to add anything?
Understood. So we have protection, let's say, on both these avenues.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fine, Jyoti, you covered.
Yeah. And just one more question. So I think Meghana mentioned about one of the projects which has achieved COD in December 2021 that we might potentially acquire. So can you give us a broad range in terms of the size of the transaction?
Meghana, you want to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, the asset is under diligence, but from a range perspective, will be somewhere about, let's say, 1,400-1,500 crores is what I can mention at this point in time.
Understood. Sure. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mahesh Shah from Edelweiss Tokio Life Insurance. Please go ahead.
Hi. So congratulations on a good quarter. One question I had is in terms of eventually all these contracts that we have, the BOOM contracts, the revenues taper down. So how are we planning to maintain the DPU? What kind of leverage are we targeting at the final end? Are we ever going to take it up to 70%, or how does that work? And how are we planning to maintain the DPU over time?
Yeah. Very good question, Mahesh. So first, in terms of our DPU strategy, we do have a plan in place to ensure that the DPU trajectory, we have a visible sort of a runway for 5-7 years at a minimum, including the potential accretions to DPU that we've been doing over the last 4-5 years. And based on the current transmission revenue trajectory, and by the way, it's not necessary that it's a linear decline. I mean, sometimes it goes up for a few years and comes down. It's sort of a flattish trajectory, at least over the next 7-8 years, and then there's some decline. Based on the current portfolio, we do have a runway up to 7-8 years easily to be able to manage the DPU expectation. And then that becomes the reason why any growth in the AUM has to be DPU accretive, because the idea behind growth is not for the sake of growth, to sort of keep on extending this DPU trajectory so that the runway continues to remain 7-8 years, right, on a rolling basis. So that's the logic behind ensuring that acquisitions are DPU accretive, yeah. Your other question, if you can just repeat that, Mahesh?
No, so that was my first piece. It's more around the how the acquisitions, right? So in terms of we've spent, I think, for a while now broadly. And so do we intend to ever go to 65%-70%, or?
Yes. 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 So 70 is a theoretical sort of it's the regulatory cap, and we don't want to go to that kind of a level. I think once we hit, let's say, somewhere around 62%-63%, we would be looking to sort of create headroom for further growth through an equity raise. There is some headroom right now. We are at 57%-58%. But yes, internally, we don't want to be at a zone where we don't have an equity plan and we are above 65%. So we start thinking about it, let's say, 60%-61%, make sure that somewhere around 62%-65%, we do have a concrete plan in place. The idea is to sort of not be above 65% at any point of time.
Understood. Another question that I had was around the national monetization pipeline. So from what I understand, the government has now kind of encouraged against transfer of full transmission assets or, you know, assets directly to private or, you know, non-government counterparties. And it's more of revenue transfer that they were looking at under the national monetization pipeline. Is my understanding correct? And, like, is that what we'll be bidding for?
So that is the, we discussed this a little bit earlier, but that is the idea or the intent of the government. And while some other infrastructure classes are more amenable to that kind of a construct, power, it's a bit difficult. So, you know, they're looking at how they can achieve the monetization in a way whereby they can, you know, live within the regulatory framework at the same time, you know, have the asset coming back at the end of the, you know, transmission, you know, license period, right? So we don't have full visibility around what the final outcome would be, but they're working on finding a path where the assets are made to, made available to private participants, but there is a mechanism whereby the asset comes back or is available to the government at the end of the concession period. We'll wait and see what construct comes, because in power, if you have a concession devoid of the asset, then that doesn't really work from a regulatory construct. There are other complications of GST, etc. And so it's taking a little bit long to stitch it together, but they're working very proactively, and we are hopeful that we should see some transmission-related monetizations in this financial year.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ankit Patel from L&T Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, Ankit Patel. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Audible. Thanks. So, thank you. My question was around the last quarter. There was a discussion of certain under construction, you know, projects also being looked at in a strategic way. So just wanted to understand what is the thought process? Does it remain the same? And also if an update is there on the KTL asset.
Yeah, so Ankit, I presume when you say KTL, you're talking about the Kallam transmission asset, which we had bid and won?
Yes.
Great. So that is the under construction asset that we had bid and won last calendar. And it's a small, around 200 crore asset in Osmanabad in Maharashtra, and it's sort of a very simple terrain, a smallish 35-40 acre, no forest approvals, you know, plain terrain. And we've been able to progress well on that particular asset. We've got the regulatory approvals, we've bought the land. We've also sort of awarded the EPC to KEC. We do expect the asset to be up and running middle of the next year, and we are doing well in terms of our initiative in that direction. The idea behind doing this is that we do have a 10% regulatory headroom to do under construction, but then we are very mindful of the under construction related challenges, infrastructure, developmental risks. So use this sort of easy project to build skills, capabilities, be very proactively, you know, looking at the feedback loop and learn from this and decide whether we want to do more of such projects at the margin from an AUM growth point of view. So far, the feedback is very, very encouraging. We managed to acquire the land using the administration in record time. KEC is a marquee, you know, contractor, so and things are looking pretty much on track. We will obviously continue to evaluate this and then update the broader market and the investors in terms of the next steps if there is any feedback loop which enables us to do more of such projects in the future. Right now, we want to stick to it. It's early days still. Just the land is there. We have to start the construction. But it's been an encouraging progress as far as the first under construction project is concerned.
Okay. So, thank you. I think then this would still be less than 1% of AUM, but would you have any targets or set any targets in terms of what kind of percentage you would like to go to?
So look, I mean, there is a regulatory cap of 10%, Ankit,
right.
You know, so it's not that we can do beyond 10% based on
within that 10%. Yeah.
No, I'll answer your question. So based on how confident we feel and based on the asset opportunities which are there, which fit into our stable distribution, you know, predictable platform strategy, we'll look at, you know, how do we play this. We are also cognizant that another way to play this could be through a framework route, right, where we sort of taking the whole asset risk on day zero, we enter into a credible partnership with an EPC player with some skin in the game, if required, some equity skin in the game, and take over the asset once the asset is ready. So sort of de-risk ourselves from the project risk part of it. So there are multiple, you know, models here. Right now, I want to just tell the investors that this is the only project that we're doing, and, you know, there's some time to go before we feel that there's enough feedback from this initiative to us for us to sort of take a, you know, concrete decision forward. We'll obviously be updating the market as and when there is any development in this respect. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Tanvir, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hi. Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, yes, you are audible.
Okay. So I have just two questions. One related to the NHAI impact that was there. Has that already been realized in this quarter, the recovered loss? And the second was, can we assume that the NER availability will be around 94% for the next two quarters or so? And I had one more for another question around last quarter. Y'all spoke about you know, speaking with SEBI regarding inclusion of InvITs in the index. Is there any update or any follow through on that part?
Yeah. So on the RTCL and NER, maybe Divya, you can update on that, and Meghna, you can update on the index inclusion efforts, please.
Sure. For NHI, yes, we have realized the loss of revenue completely. We've got an advance payment from there. On NER availability, for the quarter one, as I mentioned, we had a committee meeting and we are very confident of getting a post major. So we will get 100% revenue for the quarter one. For upcoming quarter, as we have already done a restoration through ERS, subject to the restoration, we will get the availability certificate. Yeah. And the last one, I made that. Yeah, so on the index inclusion, you know, the efforts and work is on with all the regulators, including, you know, SEBI and the exchanges. We understand that they are considering it very seriously, and we are hoping that it gets done in the coming quarters. Having said that, right now, if you're asking me if it has been done, that's not the case. But we are working with the regulators to get index entries included in indices very soon.
Okay, and you know, if I may ask, are you, I mean, have they communicated any concerns around that to you as to what is the biggest, you know, so what's stopping them from having InvITs in student?
Not really, Tanvir, it's not like any concern, but it's a process which involves two, three regulators, including the exchanges, SEBI plus. You know, largely the mutual funds, various funds also get impacted because of this. So they are just figuring out if any of the, you know, specific debt or equity funds, how will it impact per se. So as such, not a specific concern per se, but it's the process and it's being looked at.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Swarnim Maheshwari from Edelweiss Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. The first question is on Khargone. I believe Sterlite Power had commissioned this asset in January. It's been about more than 6 months. So what's taking us so long to really acquire the asset? Is the due diligence still on?
Diligence process is currently underway. While the COD was achieved, it is, as you know, COD also, post the COD, from all the approvals and from revenue recognition, etc., getting inducted in the POC per se, it takes some time. So the process is underway per se, from a diligence perspective, and we are moving, it is going at the right speed.
So when can we expect this? Next quarter, can we expect this in Q2?
I think Swarnim, forward-looking guidance, I don't think we are targeting that, but definitive agreements, etc., get done, we will announce it.
Okay, because, just curious to understand, normally whenever the assets have constructed earlier also for the framework asset, it normally hasn't taken, this long. So just wanted to understand, is there some issue? What is it exactly?
Swarnim, there is no issue. Yeah, Meghna, let me address. There's no issue as such. As Meghna alluded to, when the COD happened, there are a few loose ends around, revenues which are contingent on certain regulatory decisions, right? And so think from a seller's point of view, you want to optimize valuation when you sell. And if there is a line of sight that you will get, 100% certainty on some revenue streams based on regulatory process, and you rather wait a little bit here and there. So it's largely that. The diligence is fully on, and we don't want to sort of give a guidance because M&A gets tricky, right? But if you ask me, hand on heart, I feel this is definitely this financial year transaction, if not the calendar year. Yeah? But we'll, of course, guide the market at the right time. When the developments are, good enough to come with a formal disclosure.
Got it. But the second thing is on RTCL. So in Q1, we had a lower availability due to NHAI, and we had mentioned that everything is recovered from NHAI. Have we also recovered the incentive income from NHAI? Because, if not for that, we would have also achieved an incentive income. So is that also taken care of? Maybe it could be a small item.
Yeah, no, very good question. Yeah. So, look, there is a small, I think, if I can correct me, about 1.5 crore of non-recognition of revenue because of this. But this is only a deferment because we have full availability for this particular asset. And then as the availability sort of catches up towards the end of the year, then this is a protected revenue which will recognize, my guess is sometime in the third quarter and the fourth quarter for sure. So there's a small timing gap of recognition of revenue. I think it's 1.5 crores, if you can correct me. But beyond that, there is no real financial impact.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. And finally, on this, DigiGrid, we have rolled it out across all the assets. So how is it performing, and have we been able to see some tangible benefits, and if possible, if you can quantify, for this period and for the coming period, what would be the tangible benefits in terms of the cost savings or something from DigiGrid?
Satish, you want to take a stab at it?
Sure. Yeah. And thanks for this question. So tangible benefits will certainly take some time because the platform has been just launched and implemented, but what it enables us to, improve the transparency on all the field operating activities, what we do every day. So earlier, we were highly dependent on the people to capture all loops in a manual mode, but now those are getting entered through all the, iPads and tabs. It's coming, and it's consistent across the portfolio. That's the biggest advantage. Data starts coming in the system. The analytics will help us to make a better informed decision in terms of prioritizing the high risk defects, focusing on the right things on the portfolio, and that would drive the tangible benefits in terms of better productivity, better utilization of manpower and all the resources. But give me a couple of quarters, I'm sure we'll be able to quantify those and then present in the investor meeting.
Yeah.
Got it, Satish. Yeah.
Swarnim, if I may just add, look, I mean, there are two aspects of DigiGrid. One is, of course, what Satish mentioned. It does enable, you know, hitherto sort of, you know, non-available capabilities for, you know, preventive, predictive maintenance. And it's very good from a risk management point of view. It's also well integrated into the FA, the financial accounting system. So, in terms of some of the investments that we would have had to otherwise make in, let's say, you know, procurement and other financial related, you know, capabilities, that is sort of obviated. And the most important benefit of DigiGrid is that, you know, it helps us sort of beat the O&M, you know, increase on a year-on-year basis, you know, making it agnostic to people and some of the other aspects of inflationary, you know, elements of O&M. So it is an investment which will reap benefits over a period of time. And so far, you know, it seems to be stabilizing very well. It is also about culture and habit change, right? And that was a concern that we had, but thankfully, the team has really risen to the occasion and people are sort of taking it up quite well. Yeah, so we're very happy with the decision and the benefits will, as Satish said, will come through over a period of time.
What is the cost of this roll-off, by the way? I mean, is it a big cost? If you can just tell us, what is the cost of this roll-off?
Divya, you want to address that?
Yeah, kind of an annuity model. We spend around 2 crores a year on average.
Okay.
For a few years.
Okay. So, annuity. Fair enough. I think all my questions are answered. Sir, just one last bookkeeping question. What was the incentive income in this quarter?
Divya?
Yeah, this is around 5 crores.
Sorry, how much, Divya?
5 crores.
5 crores. Okay, because I think on a quarterly basis, we used to kind of book about 10 to 11 crores. So this quarter, it's substantial. Is it to do with NER?
Yes, we have. We did not book any incentive in NER primarily.
Okay, okay.
So,
incentive
is 5.9 crores, that's around 6 crores, sorry. Yeah.
Okay, sir, that's it from my side. Thank you so much and wish you all the best.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this was the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to the management for their closing comments.
So, thank you everybody for being on the call and for your questions and your support and trust in IndiGrid. We look forward to your continued support and wish you happy health. Stay safe. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Edelweiss Securities Limited, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines.